From the Firebird Radio Studio, it's the Authors on Fire podcast with nationally syndicated radio host and producer, Pat Rulo.
Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network, home of the Firebird Book Awards, the Positive Change Podcast Awards Hall of Fame, and our newest book song, where we create a unique one-of-a-kind song just for your book. And it's home to this podcast, Authors on Fire. I am Pat Rulo, and today's guest is Jessie Croft, a physician and thriller author. Her debut medical psychological thriller, The Resident Murder, was released on January 15th and won a Firebird Book Award. She is currently working on the sequel, which is slated for release in June, and we are about to find out more about this. Welcome to the Authors on Fire podcast, Jessie.
Thank you so much for having me. Happy to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure, and congratulations to you on winning the Firebird Book Award.
Thank you so much.
Yep. Thank you for finding us. All righty. Well, we're going to take a little sneak peek into your book. But before we do, this is your debut novel. And I'm just wondering, do you remember the moment that this story first took hold in your mind?
Well, as you know, I am a physician. So I did a residency in New York City where I grew up. And when I was going through residency, I always kind of had ideas about something I wanted to write about maybe one day. So I had taken some kind of notes along the way. I had written a few stories. I mean, I've always been a writer, and, you know, where fiction is always inspired by nonfiction. Mm-hmm. So I kind of had these ideas in my mind. And then, you know, residency is such a busy time. I didn't expect to be able to write anything then. But at some point last summer, I went back to that the idea that I had, and the story just started coming together. So I sat down one day and I suddenly had a book. It actually took me a few weeks to write, probably like 2 or 3 weeks, because the story just started pouring out of me. So I didn't really have an idea of where it was going to go when I first started on the journey. But once I started writing it, it just started to come together. That's basically how I got started.
I love that. I love organic creations, that there's really not a plan, but it unfolds the way it's obviously supposed to.
Yeah.
Yep. What is your medical specialty?
I'm a neurologist, mm-hmm. Just like my protagonist in the book, Kylie.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. All right. Well, as a physician, what made you want to explore, perhaps, let's call it the darker side of medicine?
So, you know, I think that in every field, there's a dark side. You know, I don't really think it's just inherent to medicine. But I think that going through a grueling training program, I mean, there's really nothing like a medical residency program where, you know, you're working over 80 hours a week. You build really close relationships with your colleagues. You know, they become like family. You really lean on each other. There's a lot of stressful situations. You know, you're dealing with people's lives. So it's just like a very unique experience. I've always really been into psychological thrillers. So I've always read about them. I've always been obsessed with, you know, serial murder stories. And I remember riding the subway to work every day and listening to my true crime podcasts, similar to our protagonist. Mm-hmm. So I think I've always just had an interest in those stories and just really learning about the psychology of what makes people do terrible things. And then I thought about, well, in medical residency, they're just put under a lot of stress and put into difficult situations. And that might bring about some pathology. And that's really where that whole connection came from.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Do you think the pressure cooker environment of residency can amplify darker personality traits?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we all have certain stereotypes about different specialties of residency. So, you know, surgeons certainly get a kind of the harder lot. I mean, they definitely go through more grueling training than, you know, a generalist would, for example. Mm-hmm. But we have some stereotypes about neurosurgeons, for example, which is something that I explore a little bit in the book, and that they have to be somewhat robotic to be able to do the work that they're given to do, right? You know, they're operating on people's brains. And so, to an extent, they really have to focus and kind of put aside emotion. And I think that that is an important quality for some surgeons to be able to do a good job and focus on their technique. But that also attracts a certain personality type, and it might even become exacerbated by the environment that they're in because, you know, they're doing 7 years of intense work without much socialization or contact with the outside world and really just focusing on their craft. So that can certainly bring about some personality quirks, let's say. So I incorporated that a little bit into the book and into my character, Blake.
I imagine it would attract a certain kind of personality type. And if you were not that personality type, you would soon find out and perhaps go into another field or leave medicine altogether. All right. Well, then give us a little peek into the book so our audience has an idea of what they can expect when they get a copy.
Sure. So the book is really takes place within a neurology residency program. So neurologists are they generally do 1 year of general medicine, and then they go on into their more specialized neurology field where they focus on disorders of the brain and the spinal cord. And so our lead character, Dr. Kylie Saunders, is in her first year of neurology training. So she's completed her medicine year. So now she's kind of delving into just the neurology specialty. And, you know, the book starts with her just kind of walking us through her typical day, which is busy. You know, she's seeing patients. There's so many things happening at once. Her pager keeps going off. And then we see a little bit of her interaction with her co-residents, so the people that she's going through this journey with. And then she meets this very enigmatic surgeon. He's actually in his residency as well, but he's in the neurosurgery field at the same hospital as her. And she meets him when she's out one night, and she immediately forms this connection with him. She feels like it's a very strong connection, but his behavior is kind of off. So it is a multi-POV book. So we have Kylie's POV, and then we have Blake's POV, and Blake is the surgeon. And, you know, he's a complicated guy. He seems like he's into her, but then he kind of ghosts her. He's very obsessed with his job. So he likes to talk a lot about surgery and the brain and the work that he does. And then we're given another POV, which is about a little boy and a boy who describes his traumatic childhood. And so we're going through these three different POVs. And about, you know, maybe 25% into the book, there is a murder that happens in the residency program that Kylie is in. So it happens to one of her colleagues, a colleague that was very well respected, and her name's Chloe. And so as Kylie is a very true crime obsessed person. So she loves listening to true crime podcasts. She loves getting to the bottom of things. So she's just kind of trying to figure out what happened to her co-resident. And while she's going through this process of figuring things out, she starts having doubts about the people in her life, particularly about Blake. And so we're kind of immersed now in this investigation, but also questioning all the characters and questioning our narrator as well at times.
Oh my. Just those multiple perspectives and points of view. How was that writing? Like, what did the structure allow you to reveal or maybe even conceal about the mystery?
So I think you know, it's sometimes it's difficult to write a character that is maybe like yourself. I mean, I had a lot of people ask me, you know, are you Kylie? And the answer is no. I mean, I specifically made things about her that are not like my life. Like, you know, she grew up in Florida. This is her first time living in New York. She's kind of figuring out her way. But I think that, you know, like I said before, there are elements of true life that kind of come and permeate the characters. And so it's hard to keep the author voice separate from the character voice. But as I was a neurology resident myself, some of the things that Kylie gripes about, like, her arduous hours of training and the way that women are treated in the field as opposed to men. I have certain scenes in the book where she arrives to see a patient and she's with a male medical student, and the patient immediately looks to the male medical student thinking that's the doctor. And so those kinds of things happen a lot as a woman in medicine. And definitely, I think that was like my voice peeking through a little bit. So I think that's the hardest part about doing that is just staying true to this character and making sure that your voice is not dominating the character. And then of course with Blake's voice, that's difficult because he's a man and we don't always know what's going on in the minds of the opposite sex. So it's a little bit harder to figure out how he would respond to certain situations or what would be going through his head. So I felt that there was a challenge there with that. But it was really interesting because I felt like as I was writing the book, the characters kind of led me down their own paths. So I didn't really have to do too much thinking, like, well, what would happen next and what would he do next? He just kind of manifested for me. So that I thought that was an interesting part of the process.
I always think that that's an interesting part of the process, and I almost can't even figure out how it is a part of the process where you are the author, you're the writer, and you're putting your words and thoughts and feelings on a page, and all of a sudden these characters take off as if they've got a human brain, and they just lead the author. And so many authors tell me that, and I just find that fascinating. I write nonfiction myself, so I can't even imagine how that happens or what it must feel like. So your book has a relentless pace of shorter chapters, rising stakes, constant unease. Were there moments, let's talk about the pacing for a minute, were there moments where you had to pull back on medical detailing for the pacing? Because I know I would probably go down medical rabbit holes and take the reader into encyclopedic venture.
Yes, so that was also a challenge because you definitely want to watch the medical jargon. The majority of the readership is not going to be familiar with some of the medical words used and some of the lingo. So I try to describe things as best as I could. Like, instead of saying something like, "Oh, they went to get an MRI of the brain," I said, "Oh, an image of the brain," to show us if the patient had a clot, something like that. A more simplistic way of saying, to check for a stroke or using more medical terms. So that was a little bit hard to pull back and think about, okay, how would somebody who has no experience in the medical field view this? But the other interesting part of it was that I actually had a lot of people reach out to me who are in neurosurgery or nurses, other doctors saying that they felt that I had described their experience perfectly or just the setting of the hospital and they loved those medical parts. So it's a fine balance, making sure the majority of the readership can absorb the information and not be bogged down by it to where it affects the reading, but also, having kind of this language with others who might understand and being and kind of give a nod to them.
Yeah, I figured that would probably be a challenge.
Yeah, I remember one neurosurgeon, she's a woman, she told me, is Blake in my program because I've definitely met like so many Blakes.
Oh, that's such a compliment, isn't it?
Yes, it is. She's like, you got him down pat. This is like the fits the stereotype. I was like, that's funny. So.
You did good there. Oh my gosh. So dating apps play a role in the plot. What fascinated you about pairing modern dating culture with a murder investigation and with medicine?
So when I was in my residency, I would say that a huge percentage of my co-residents actually met their partners on dating apps. And then this was in, I was a resident between 2014 2014 and 2018. So I think it was a really popular time for people to be using dating apps to meet people. And I think as our culture becomes more digital, people are not meeting organically as much anymore. We don't hear stories like that as much. In fact, I met my husband through a dating app. So I definitely wanted to incorporate that just because I felt that it was true to the times that we're living in. But there was always this kind of hesitation with apps because you're like nervous, oh, is somebody an imposter or am I being catfished? But the way that I think about it is, even if you were to meet somebody organically out somewhere, you are somewhat at a disadvantage because you don't really have a resume in front of you. When you go through a dating app, you kind of have some basic information. Where does this person live? Maybe where they work. You start talking online, make sure you have some things in common before you decide to meet up. And I actually had met my husband on it, but we found out we worked at the same hospital, which made me feel more comfortable about going out with him. So all of those things kind of played a part when I was thinking about the apps. And I just wanted to keep it, true to society and where society is moving.
Oh my, that's so true. There is a pre-screening basically, compared to just meeting somebody out on the street. I heard something wild just the other day where someone was talking about a friend as a way to meet men. She would go into a nice restaurant and just walk up to a table and ask the man of her desire there just to say, "May I see your left hand?" And if they raise the left hand and it doesn't have a ring, then she's Her friend would just hand them a piece of paper with her phone number on it. And that's how this woman was meeting people. And I thought, oh my gosh, how scary is that? Not even an opportunity for a conversation, you know?
Definitely.
So dating apps seem to be much safer than even that type of a type of an approach. Phew. So your novel raises some questions about obsession, power, morality in medicine. Was there a theme that you were most interested in exploring? And if so, how come?
So a theme that I was most interested in exploring is how sometimes things are not so black and white, and there's a gray area there. And, with Blake, I actually struggled with him because I wanted him to be a character that was creepy, which I think I achieved, but at the same time, redeemable. And so because he was the love interest of my protagonist. And I don't want to give away too much of what happens in the book and the plot, but I think that for a lot of the characters in the book, there are good sides and then there may be a darker side. And that darker side may not necessarily mean that they're evil or that they would murder somebody, but it's just part of them. And can you kind of accept the darker side, and ex to be with the good side or to spend time with the good side? So, and I think that's just true with human nature. It's not always black and white, and there's a gray area where you're like, well, this person does this. I don't really love it, but there's these great qualities about them, so I'm going to continue to see where this goes. And I think that's what Kylie kind of struggles with Blake when she gets mixed signals. And yeah, without giving too much away, I wanted him to be somebody that I could carry from one book to the next.
Right. So you knew when you were writing this that there was a sequel.
Yes, I did.
Is just two books or is it a trilogy?
My plan is a trilogy. So the sequel's actually written. It's in the hands of my editor now. And I'm just starting to come up with an idea for the trilogy for the third book. But I know that my readers are very interested to see what happens with both Kylie and Blake.
That's so exciting to have people wanting to read more. It's so affirming, isn't it?
Yes.
It really is. Yeah. So, I mean, you have a demanding medical career, and so many people, feel like in order to be a writer, you just have to be a writer. You can't do anything else and devote it to that. talk about that just briefly, about your ability to balance that medical career with writing your first novel and now your second and then your third.
Yeah, so I think, when I go home, I really, after my son goes to bed is my writing time at night. And that's actually when my brain works the best. And what I'll do sometimes during the day, I'll have an idea, but I'll be in a situation where I can't really get to a computer and write it down. So I'll just put it into the notes app on my phone. And so things will come up during the day and I'll be like, oh, that's a good idea, or I should do this in the book. And I'll write it down. And then later at night, I'll kind of bring it all together and type it out. So that's kind of my protected time, is when my son goes to sleep. It definitely can be a struggle balancing those things. But I think working as a physician also inspires my writing, because things will come up and I'll think of an idea, and it might be based on something that happened at work, or something that a patient told me, and I'll think, oh, okay, this is an interesting idea for one of my characters. But it can be difficult. I mean, I think my experience with the first two books was that the story came to me really quickly, and so I could get it down and I didn't have to spend too much time thinking about what I want to happen next. It kind of came out of me. But not every book is going to be like that. And I'm seeing that a little bit with the third one, where I really have to think about it more, because I have two books before it and I need to make sure that everything kind of is seamless, right? So like the characters that I had in book one and then in book two, I have to recall, well, what happened to this person in book one and what happened to this person in book two? And what did I, what qualities did I give this person? What physical attributes did I give? I have to make sure that that's all consistent in book three. So I think book three is going to be a little bit more challenging. But yeah, I just feel like if something is a passion for you, it's like working out, for example. If you make it a priority, you'll do it. You'll wake up an hour earlier in the morning to make sure you get your workout in. But you should just find that protective time, whether it's early in the morning or at night or on your lunch break, even if you only have 30 minutes at lunch, to jot some things down and, make that a priority.
Right. And I'm sure your job, as in most people's jobs, really, when you say write about what you know, even if it's nonfiction, then to fiction, there's plenty of food for potential storylines or characters. And I'm sure in your situation, even more so.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other thing I will say is to keep reading in the genre that you're writing in.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, I read a lot, and I really love psychological thrillers. So sometimes I'll be reading one and, I'll be like, oh, that's an interesting way to, off a character or and it might inspire something else in my mind. Like, oh, that's interesting. I should think about this, for my book, or something attribute about a character that I like, and I think, okay, I want to incorporate that into my character. So I do think it helps to read in the genre, to know what people expect in the genre. Like with psychological thrillers, it's become challenging to create twists because readers have just become very well versed in the genre and they're always looking out for those twists. And one of the best compliments I get is when somebody tells me they had no idea, like, that this was the twist or this is what was going to happen, which I've heard a lot about this book. People would be like, oh, I never even saw that coming. And that makes me really happy. But it's hard to sustain that, I think, for every novel. So I don't know, you just have to get more creative.
Exactly. It's a challenge. I was just going to ask you about that. If you were surprised by readers saying that they didn't see the ending coming, or was that your goal when you were writing it, to completely kind of pull the rug out from under them? And no spoilers here, but
right. Absolutely. My goal was to completely pull the rug out from under them. And I feel like I doubted myself a few times, like, oh, is this a good enough plot twist? Are people going to see this? But I feel reassured by the fact that most haven't so far, or they haven't told me they have. So I think that at least gave me some confidence for the next one. And you know, I feel bad when I read another author's book and I'm like, oh, I already saw this coming. Like I knew it was going to be this person. It's like, oh, the book is still good. I still enjoyed the book, but I predicted, you know, who was going to be the killer or what was going to happen. So I'm like, oh, I don't want to be, you know, found out early on. So
That's like watching a Hallmark movie. I could turn it off after, say, about the first hour because I know exactly what's going to happen. It's just like
Right.
the first hour is the most interesting because it's building up the characters. Then after that, it's like, all right, I can go to bed now. I know what's going to happen. Now, you don't
Right.
want to be that. You don't want to do that. All right. So we know that you're working on the sequel. I'm wondering as you're speaking, if you were to write in another genre just for fun, what would it be?
Maybe romance. And the reason I say that is that what was interesting to me when I wrote this book, I didn't really intend to have this big romance subplot, but that's what ended up happening. And I had readers, you know, reach out to me about the romantic relationships that my character went through and wanting to know more about this relationship and really rooting for this relationship. And so I thought, huh, okay, that wasn't really my intention. And then I started seeing people write, it's like a romantic thriller, you know, in their reviews. So that got me thinking that it would be interesting to, you know, dabble in romance. But I don't know. I tend to like darker things, so I think there'll have to be some darkness in
A
it.
dark romance, right?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Well, we have talked about a lot of goodies here today, and I want to make sure we didn't miss anything that you wanted to bring up or highlight. Please feel free to do so.
No, I mean, I'm really thankful to be here and to talk about my book, and I'm excited for the sequel, and I hope people will tune in for that one too.
What'd we say in June?
Yes, it's planned for June. Yep.
Okay. All right. That gives us something to look forward to. Well, if you would then share your contact information where folks can find out more and get copies of The Resident Murder.
Thank you. So The Resident Murder is available on Kindle Unlimited on Amazon. So the ebook is just through Amazon, but the paperback is widely distributed through Amazon, Barnes and Noble, some major retailers. Also, an audiobook is in the works, but not available yet. And anybody who wants to contact me can use the contact form on my website, which is jessiecroft.com. So JessieKroft.com. I also have social media. So I'm Jessie_Croft at Instagram and JessieCroft on TikTok. And I have a Facebook author page as well.
All righty, you are in all the right places. So we're speaking with Jessie Croft. The book is titled The Resident Murder, and it's available now. And it's perfect for fans of medical thrillers, dark mysteries, and page turners. You accidentally stay up too late reading. I think it's something you're not going to want to put down. The website is jessiecroft.com. Jessie, thank you so much for joining us and giving our audience a glimpse into the world behind your story. And I know that we won't be able to wait to see where this series goes next. So thanks so much.
Thank you. I appreciate you having me today.